Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. No, this is not an old edition of the show. This is not JNPO Retro. This is brand new. God, I feel like I've been on a desert island since the last time, been secluded, been so long since I talked to you guys. Last, it has been a long time. No other reason other than lethargy, something like that. Just being lazy, I guess, and not being really motivated to do a show because, you know, there's been some interesting stuff happening, but, you know, I needed kind of something to give me the spark again. And this weekend's doing it. Saturday, big show. UFC returns to Madison Square Garden. George St. Pierre returns. Michael Bisping got some nice title fights. Really fun main card pay-per-view for UFC 217 and some other interesting stuff going on as well. So we talk about all that and more with special guests this week, Ryan McKinnell. Ryan does some writing for Fanside, Yahoo Sports, SI, and also is the pre- and post-game show host for UFC events on Sirius Rush 93, which is essentially all like combat sports. Also Barstool Sports does some stuff there as well. But it's a really fun channel. If you get Sirius XM Radio, Channel 93, Luke Thomas' show is on there, MMA Junkie, and so on and so forth. So Ryan does the post and pre-show, pre and post-show for all UFC events on there. So Ryan and I talked for an hour, solid hour about all kinds of things going on in the sport. You know, talked about this weekend's show, really in terms of really focusing on the top two fights rather, and just the promotion leading up to this. A lot of things that people are talking about, not really a technical breakdown or anything like that. So we talk about that. We talk about Michael Bisping and Jorge Masvidal's a little dust up in a hotel that happened on Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday morning, an unfortunate gay slur being thrown out there. So we discuss that whole situation as well as all kinds of other stuff as well. So this is a really fun conversation. We talk, of course, we kick off with a little bit of baseball talk. However, this was recorded Wednesday afternoon, and as it is, I'm recording this right now, it is 11:11 on November 1st, and the Astros are up 5-1 on the Dodgers going into the top of the seventh, or in the top of the seventh, rather. So it looks like the Astros, unless a catastrophe hits, this will be their very first World Series title in history. So, again, a little bit of baseball talk at the beginning, but we recorded this before Game 7. All right, with all that being said, let's get to it. Episode 81 is here, and so is Ryan McKinnell of Fansided, Sports Illustrated, Yahoo, and Sirius XM Rush. UFC 217 happens this Saturday night, and obviously all kinds of other fun news and some not so fun news as always in the world of mixed martial arts. And joining me for the very first time here in this very broadcast, and actually first time I believe as a podcast guest on this very site, is a man that I've been looking forward to talking to for quite some time. He does some great work for Fansided, SI, host on Sirius XM's Rush channel. He's actually hosting the pre and post shows this Saturday night on Sirius XM Rush 93. You can hear him there and all over the place. The one and only Ryan McKinnell joins us, and Ryan, we'll really start out with the hard-hitting fastball questions, okay? So buckle up. Here's the first one. Houston or L.A. tonight?
Oh, well, I can say this. I have no dog in the fight. And thank you also, before I get to that, for the great intro. I appreciate it. I'm super stoked to be here. I'm one of the, I guess, few, I don't know, that are excited for UFC 217. I don't know how the reception's been, so I'm looking forward to it. Now, back to the Dodgers and Astros. I can say this. I don't have a dog in the fight. And as far as any non-Chicago World Series go, this is the most excited I've ever been for a baseball game. I can't believe the series these two teams have put on. I've been a baseball fan my whole life, White Sox fan, and just watching Game 2 and then Game 5 the other night, my jaw was on the floor. So I kind of alternate going back and forth between who I'm rooting for, because both teams, I mean, you know, all my Dodger friend fans haven't really seen a World Series, and I know all my Astro friends haven't seen a World Series. So I'm going to be happy for whoever wins. I'm just hoping for a good game.
I would agree with that. And it's same here. So I'm a Red Sox fan, having grown up in New England and all that good stuff. But yeah, we have obviously Jeremy Botter, huge Astros fan. We have Josh Gross, who's a Dodgers fan. And all these, of course, other people out in L.A. And all over the media are all on the sides. Yeah, I don't have a dog in the fight either. I hope if we get anything like that, Cubs-Indians, was it Game 6 or Game 7 was the finale last year? Yeah. I'm completely blank.
Game 7.
Game 7, that's
Game,
right.
Game
yes.
7.
Yes.
Yeah, and the rain delay and that insanity. Still the greatest game that I've ever seen play in every sport because of the drama, but more so because of the 110-plus years. You know, I'm from the Northwest Indiana area, which is right outside Chicagoland. I had family who were Cubs friends, you know, fans that lived and died. 110 years is a very long time, or 111, whatever it ended up being. Right. So the drama on that game and the emotion behind it, there'll never be another game like it. But this series that we're witnessing right now between LA and Houston is, it's the greatest series I've ever seen. I can't believe what we're watching.
So I have, actually two White Sox tie-ins I think you'll like. So, the first one being that obviously people remember that our baseball fans back in 2004, the Red Sox ending their streak after 87 years, 85 years, something like that. The year after that, the White Sox won, ending their streak of, was it 60 some odd years? How long was it?
No. We were longer than the Red Sox. That was we were in the 90s. Yeah. I want to say we hadn't won since the Black Sox, so the 1919 scandal.
You're right.
Then
we won
in 2005. So it had been, and I went to game one of that series in Chicago with my mom. And I actually wrote about it for Yahoo Sports. They did a Homer History series last year leading up to the start of the series in spring training. Excuse me, the start of the season in spring training. And I wrote about Canerco's grand slam in game two. I had went to game one. And I remember that game one, it had hailed. We had sleet and hail. And it was so fitting for the first Chicago World Series we had in the city. And that is when, it was the first Chicago World Series in 60 some odd years, for either Cubs or White Sox. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That was a long stretch too. So the other tie-in is that as I sit in my office, I look over at a bat signed by my favorite baseball player of all time, who is actually Frank Thomas.
Nice. Big Hurt.
The Big Hurt.
He's a Las Vegas resident.
Is he?
Yeah, I see him occasionally. Yeah, I see him occasionally from time to time around the city. He is one of my favorite White Sox. Actually, I grew up a Cubs fan until about 1992, and then they built a new stadium, which was closer to my house. The White Sox did, and Frank Thomas became a force in Major League Baseball. So I actually switched to a White Sox fan in 1992, but I've been a White Sox fan ever since. But I'm glad to hear you're a Big Hurt fan. That man was unbelievable. Kids, if you're out there listening and you don't know about Frank Thomas, go watch his highlights. Naturally gigantic. I believe he went to Auburn, came out of Auburn at 6'6" or whatever he was, hitting for 340, 40 home runs and 140 RBIs. He was a machine. He was a monster. And rightfully so, one of a lot of people's favorite players from that generation.
Had Barry Bonds not been doing what he was doing at that time, I think Thomas would have even been a bigger star just because there was so much attention going on there. But this is a guy, you mentioned it size-wise, this is a guy who could have been a USC heavyweight for sure. Probably have to cut down. I mean, he was a tight end at Auburn, and he actually had he actually left the team after his freshman year because he wanted to focus on baseball. And this guy's huge, and not just saying for power. You mentioned the average. I mean, 353 one season, just insane numbers year after year after year. And someone I still think is a little bit underappreciated just because he didn't have that he had a very like kind, nice persona. But it wasn't one of these guys, and obviously social media is so much different now, but it wasn't like a David Ortiz type, just this crazy, wild, magnanimous, just out there, one of these guys. Dude, it was just a lot different. But yeah, he was outstanding.
Yeah, you mentioned Bonds there, and that's a great point you make. And I would even go further to say, you talk about the magnanimous, charismatic, likable stars, Ken Griffey Jr. from that era. Griffey took a lot of shine from everybody because for a good run there, he was baseball. And the smile and the backwards hat. I mean, he was the Michael Jordan of baseball. That whole era for baseball, it had a little bit of something for everybody. You had Cal Ripken doing his thing. You had young stars coming up. You had Bonds, you had Griffey, you had Thomas. Very similar to what we're dealing with now, honestly, in Major League Baseball. When you look at the Trouts and the Altuves and the established stars that are doing their things, and the young MVPs we're having. And it's good, too, because I just saw the ratings for the last few games or for this World Series, and we're in the 14s, 15s, 16s, and 17s. It's getting really high, so a lot of people are watching this series and getting introduced to these young stars, and it happened last year too with the Cubs being in it. So hopefully there's a bit of resurgence going on for the sport of baseball, because I love it, and you know, finding out you love it. A lot of people love baseball. It just, you know, it's a bit of a slower sport that requires patience. And in today's kind of go world and instant gratification and ADD kind of culture we're living in, you know, slowing down and having some patience isn't the worst thing. So I hope we see it.
Good transition to the sport of MMA, a lot different than baseball in a lot of different ways. But in talking about that, so I want to kind of give people an idea of where you came from in terms of how you first started covering the sport. And obviously I mentioned off the top, you know, Fansided, Sports Illustrated, Yahoo Sports, and you're doing the SiriusXM thing as well. Kind of give people a sense of how you got into this sport, covering it, and where they can read you, listen to you, and how you get involved in all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I started in the sport in very early 2007. Like so many people, I started a much smaller website, just doing work for free, you know, interviewing fighters. I knew I had a natural interest and inquisitiveness, I guess, and an ability to talk to people. So I was still in college at that point, and I just started interviewing a lot of like Ultimate Fighter guys and IFL guys. Yeah, for anybody who remembers the IFL, International Fight League. So I was doing stuff with them. And then I actually covered my first IFL event in early 2007 and linked up with a site that was called MMA Madness. It's no longer around, mm-hmm. but it had a really great team. It had a really great team right off the bat of talented people. Some people that are still around today. Luke Thomas started there. I was working with Luke in 2007. Danny Acosta from Sure Dog and USA Today, yep. ESPN. He'll also be my co-host actually this Saturday on all the right. pre and post shows on Sirius. But yeah, so we kind of all collaborated there, met a lot of good people through MMA Madness. And then that was my first actual paid legitimate gig in mixed martial arts. That's when I guess I kind of, you know, wanted to take it a step further, and I kind of fell in love with the athletes, the sport, the people behind the scenes, just everything. The sport became, I've been a fan my whole life ever since UFC 1. It had taken a shift there where, it became more of a responsibility. When you start getting paid for things, you have a journalistic integrity, you have a responsibility to the athletes, to the future athletes, to the readers. You want to do right by the sport. So, after MMA Madness, I linked up with, the guys over at MMA Weekly for a few years. I worked over there at the same time I was doing, the National Examiner for a site called examiner.com. So I did that for about 5 years while working with MMA Weekly. Then I did some work with Fight Magazine. Mm-hmm. I worked with UFC Magazine for a couple years, did a few cover stories for them. Let's see. After that, I got hooked up with Yahoo Sports, and yeah, it's been a pretty wild ride the last 3 or 4 years. Just working with Yahoo, been on Sirius. I started with Sirius actually doing stuff with them back in 2007, as far as guest spots. So I've been with Sirius, at least a voice on their station, for about 10 years. So yeah, I kind of a decade in. This will be my 10th year. And no signs of slowing down just quite yet, so I'm enjoying the ride.
Excellent. I'm curious. You're the we've had different people on that have subbed in on Sirius before, but actually, you're the first person that I really kind of talked to. It's been doing a lot with them. How does that process work? Do you have a home studio you have built? Do you have a studio that you go to? How's the schedule work and all those type of things? And I'm really fascinated by how that works, especially with them making the switch. I believe it was last year or 2 years ago to essentially an all combat sports channel. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, that was, and that's a great memory on your part. Yeah, actually, having been there you know, I don't want to say on and off, but sporadically for the last 10 years, whether in a guest capacity or a host capacity, analyst capacity, whatever, it has went through so many different changes, different stations and different time slots for certain shows like Fight Club. It's been chaotic, but the listeners have been loyal, as MMA fans in general tend to be. They tend to be diehard, especially when you think back to those 2007, 8, 9 years when it was still very much an internet culture and the Fox deal had yet to come to fruition. Reebok deal, obviously. It was still, although it was gaining steam in the mainstream, it was still very much a fringe sport. So the fans were very protective and very loyal to the channel and to the hosts and to the listeners, and still very much are to this day. But yeah, 2 years ago, we finally got our own channel, more or less, a combat sports channel, and that's Rush on 93. And Luke Thomas has his show on there, the MMA Junkie Boys. They've got their show on there. And then you've got MMA Tonight. And then you have the pre and post fight shows. We do those specialty shows, and that's where you can find me. As far as regular scheduling goes, that is my regular schedule to handle the pre and post fight duties. And then we have our weekly shows and all that good stuff. As far as you asked what we do as far as studios go, that's a little bit easier. That's just, they rent out studios, at least for myself and Danny. I tend to use the ESPN studios here in Las Vegas. Steve Cofield, who's a host on the channel, also works out of there. So that's a relationship that we have. And then I think we rent, I don't know the studio that Danny uses up in San Francisco. They rent him a studio. Then I know some hosts like RJ Clifford, he has an ISDN box at his house. So he does the show from his house. It really just depends on where you're at, where your locale is. If you're in New York, obviously you go to the SiriusXM studios. That's where our producers and everyone in charge is located. So it just depends on the host and what show it is and how the scheduling works out.
Awesome. Cool. Well, great. That's that's really interesting stuff. We do a lot of have a lot of media people on the show. It's kind of interesting hearing their backgrounds, where they came from, and also current situations as well. That's fascinating stuff. So let's go to other fascinating stuff, which is obviously this weekend, UFC 217. And it has been a interesting build to this show, and I don't know what to make of it. And the discussion seems to be, you know, a lot around kind of the GSP factor. But before we even get to that, I want to talk about something that happened today. And I don't know if you've got a chance to see it. You probably have heard of this. The Michael Bisping, Jorge Masvidal little dust up today.
I did. Yeah. I did see that.
So yeah. I just got to throw this out there because I got to get this off my chest. So, you know, they have this confrontation. And look, these guys are fighters. I get this. And I understand that these, you know, any type of pro sports, especially there's this much aggression, this much testosterone. Obviously, with women, it's different. But you get what I mean. This much aggression, this much anger, animosity. These guys aren't even fighting, right? But they've had kind of a beef for a long time. I wish that we would get past the point where a gay slur just happens to kind of just float out of someone's mouth at the end of these things. And we're coming off the McGregor thing with Artem Lobov. We're coming off the Fabricio Werdum thing with Ferguson, countless situations and things like this. And the end of this clip, you just hear Masvidal throw one of these out. It's just like, again, I understand these guys are under, you know, a lot of pressure and all this stuff. I just hope that everyone would just kind of like think of more clever ways to insult someone as opposed to kind of going to that. And perhaps it's upbringing. Perhaps it's just the current situation. Perhaps it's just all these other factors. Just a PSA or just a statement. I wish guys would just get past this. And I don't know if we'll ever be past this. Maybe 40 years from now, 50 years from now, something like that. I just heard that and I was just like, come on, man. Just, you know, say something more clever. I don't know. That's just kind of my rant. I don't know if you agree, disagree or not.
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, to the standpoint that it's unfortunate. And there is a bit of me that wonders how it keeps happening, because although yes, this is the ICU business, this is a sport birthed in the bingo halls of the South. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have our fair share of history of racism, violence, sexism, and every other ism and phobia that you want to throw in there. I understand that asking a sport like you know, MMA to change some of this stuff is a bit unrealistic. But at the same time, you got to look at this specifically the McGregors. Like, listen, hey, I get it. Verdum doesn't really care about his image. He rubs elbows with Ramzan Kadyrov and other war criminals. So the fact that he uses gay slurs doesn't come as a shock to me. And with McGregor, the thing that I wanted to get to is he has a history of saying, you know, dumb stuff, I guess, for lack of a better term, just insensitive, culturally insensitive stuff. The boy stuff and the dancing monkey stuff to Floyd was way out of line. And you wanted to have your rant. I'm just going to interject here real quick before I get back on this.
Right.
But the dancing monkey thing, I had a lot of people coming at me because I went on Twitter and said how racist it was. And, oh, it's not racist. It's not racist in Ireland and blah, blah, blah. Everyone had something to say. I would challenge anybody, all you Irish fans listening and anybody else who wants to combat me or contest me on that as boy not being racist, go up to any black man in the street in America waiting across the street. Just go up to him, tap him on the shoulder, and hey, what's up, boy? See what happens. See what happens, and then you can answer that question to yourself. Is boy racist? Okay, it's racist. It's not even a debate. It's not even a it's not a toss-up. But anyway, getting back to wanting to see things change and what's behind these comments and why aren't we seeing the change? I mean, I think at a base level, it's an intelligence thing, but with that intelligence, you know, if you're not smart enough to understand that cameras are all around you at all times and you're going to suffer backlash on social media, whatever, try to look at it this way. Try to look at yourself from a business. You know, Nate Diaz went after Donald Cerrone not too long ago for Donald saying he would fight for free. And Nate was one of the few to come out and be like, dummy, what are you talking about? You'd fight for free. Like, this is our job. Like, don't go saying you give away what we do for free. We're risking our lives out there. And that's very true. So with that in mind of making money and going out there and putting your lives on the line, don't diminish your brand by doing dumb stuff. And this is just simple stuff you can do and curtail and avoid that's going to, at the end, make yourself more money. Because throwing out, like, you know, racial slurs and stuff like that and homophobic slurs, that's not going to increase your bottom line. You might think that whole adage of all press is good press is true. Not true. Not true. So, from a business standpoint, I would implore these guys to take a second look and shore up their vocabulary.
Well put. Well put on both of our parts. Let's go to GSP.
Right. Pat on the back.
Yeah, guy who... A guy who is coming back here is not known for using really any slurs or anything like that. A guy that this
– All right.
Yeah, this GSP thing, I tell you what, man, it's so interesting. So he's back after 4 years, and he is coming back in a division he's never fought in before. This whole story, Bisping thing, we kind of get it's an attraction fight. It's a fight with a lot of question marks. But the trend over the past couple of weeks, a really discussion point is a generation kind of moved on, and that everyone that's left, the hardcores remember GSP, watch GSP, but there's a whole group that are like, I don't know who this guy is. I've never seen him fight. I don't really care. What's the big deal? And it's like, oh, yeah, no. Everyone knows who he is. But I think a lot of people don't remember who he is or kind of forgotten. It's just been such a long time. And, you know, it's not like Mike Tyson coming back where everyone remembers, the knockouts and things like that. Just it's a much different thing. So I guess going into this Saturday, what do you think about how, the buzz around the fight, I hesitate saying the promotion around it because, that is what it is. And UFC is pretty cookie cutter now with how they promote stuff. Is it been lacking to you? Are you as excited about this? Not as excited? What's your sense of being out there? Kind of and talking to people all the time. What is your sense of kind of the excitement level going into this fight?
Well, I mean, from what I can gauge, the excitement is not there, at least in the way that I anticipated it would be. Just all around, just in general, website traffic, forum chatter, engagements on Twitter, the chatter on the streets here in Las Vegas, talking to my media friends in New York. You could see it in the open workout pictures from Toronto a couple weeks ago. There was nobody there. I'm shocked for a couple of reasons. I think the foremost being that MMA is in a real tight spot right now. It kind of actually reminds me of when GSP went away. There wasn't anybody clear on the horizon. Ronda had, I believe, just headlined her first pay-per-view, but was yet to be a draw. That came with Kohea. Conor McGregor was still on the prelims. Brock Lesnar was not here. John Jones was in trouble. Shocking. and we fast forward now 5 years later, and it's very much the same situation. I knew we'd be here. I was there the night of the 20th anniversary when George walked away. He was only 32 at the time. Now he's 36. I knew it would probably be about this time, maybe 35. I thought maybe a year earlier. It always felt like a leverage move to me.
Yeah.
In terms of he was trying to leverage his value, that there were no stars on the horizon, and that he wanted to get super paid when he came back, which is what a smart businessman would do. And that's something he's always been ahead of the curve on, as far as his image and branding and making smart business decisions, from Under Armour to Captain America to a million other things. George is and was a force in the sport. Now, the question is, how much of a force is he still in the eyes of everyone, the hardcore, the general fan? That I think we're just going to have to wait and see until Saturday. I expected much more, especially from the standpoint that they're just not being the amount of stars. I thought his leverage was going to be high. I thought when he came back, people would be excited. I thought he would be a bit of a savior. I thought people would be generally excited that this greatest of all time upper echelon legend was coming back to a sport that dire straits in the terms of legitimacy, in the terms of star power. We're coming off Mayweather McGregor, which, you know, is entertaining, and in the numbers that it did and all those things, and as successful as it was, to me, it was a con and a sham, and it will always be that. And the sport, I mean, you saw it, the greatest fighter of all time, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, pulled off a suplex to armbar transition finish. And under 100,000 people saw that. That's a problem. So, you know, George coming back, we're in a weird place. If this doesn't succeed, I'm going to be very perplexed. Like, if this does under 500K, I'm going to be very confused.
So you brought up a good point about the kind of the leverage, and for the last, yeah, you're right, last year and a half, give or take, it's been this off again, on again, off again, on again. Will he, won't he, will he, won't he? And the way that Dana White went about this whole thing, just kind of seemed like, oh, he doesn't want to come back. Or maybe just like, this is was one of your big stars that basically was put his stake in the ground for an entire freaking country to get us back and be like, he's the one that got the Under Armour deal. He's the one that was, you know, when I remember going up there for, to Montreal for GSP versus Diaz. I mean, this is his country. He was one of the top sports stars in the country. And that was ahead of like hockey players and other major stars. I mean, he was the guy. And you have this guy coming back, potentially coming back. You're like, ah, I don't know. Like, it just how it ended again, that fight against the UFC 20th anniversary show against Johnny Hendricks, how that whole thing went down was kind of like, did you think GSP won or lost? And I thought he lost. I haven't rewatched that fight in a long time. But for the most part, a lot of people thought Hendricks won. But you could kind of – you could make a coin flip how that whole situation ended with, you know, he owes us something by taking time off and not telling us. It's like he doesn't owe you anything. Just this whole strange situation from there to where we've got to. The thing about when he talked about he thought he was a free agent. UFC's like, well, you're not a free agent. It's just been a very weird ride to get here. And I think that when guys come back, and I remember UFC 199 last year when they were the announcement that Brock was coming back. And that was just kind of a surprise thing, kind of broke that night, and it built and it was like, okay, it's here. And with GSP, it's been this thing of like so on again, off again, on again, off again. It seems hard to kind of get that mental excitement.
Right. The opposite of the Brock thing.
Yeah. So right. I think that's really hurt this. Plus it's in a division that is he's not competed in, so there's that question mark. It's just a really weird road to get here. The Madison Square Garden thing, it's cool, but this is not last year's show in Madison Square Garden by any means. So it's just this is a great card, but this has been a weird ride to get to this fight.
Well, I think you touched on it there briefly, and I can look back to, you know, one thing, if George has been on and off again, you know, outside the media, not having his name in there as much as maybe he would have liked to have had, one thing that's been a constant for the last 4 years, or a relative constant, is Dana White and his ego slandering George St. Pierre at every turn. Oh, and you mentioned this. Oh, his heart isn't in it. He doesn't really want it. A real fighter has to want to fight, and George St. Pierre doesn't really want to fight. Now, this goes along with his rhetoric of, if you don't like it, don't buy it. If it's too many cards, don't buy it, blah, blah, blah. You constantly ring out that rhetoric. You constantly hammer it home. Some people are going to take you up on that offer, and that just is dumb promoting to me. Why? You can say that, you know, Paul Ryan status in a closed room and keep it all on board, right? Like, hey, this doesn't leave this room. But why would you put it out there for the public to latch onto? And then the Dana White, you know, well, loyalists are going to, you know, latch onto that more than anybody. They're going to be like, yeah, George St. Pierre, he is a pussy. He doesn't really want to give back to the fans. All he does is leg hump anyway. And a million other, you know, things I've heard over the last decade with George St. Pierre. One thing you touched on, he was Canada without question. Like, I lived in Las Vegas. I live in Las Vegas. And those fight weeks with George St. Pierre, they were very, very similar to the invasion that Vegas experiences when Conor McGregor fights. Yeah. They would come in with their karate gis and their George St. Pierre signs, and they would flood the MGM Grand and the Mandalay Bay. And that was a huge uptick. You saw it with the 55,000 fans against Jake Shields in Toronto. I mean, George St. Pierre was the sport, and there's no reason to think he can't come back right now and still carry that torch during this lull that we're having. But, you know, the UFC has to be behind it. And you said you brought up the promotion stuff in regards to this fight. It's been very weird. And I do tie it back to what you said as far as the on again, off again. I think there's a good chance people have just got worn out at this point, that it just been their heartstrings have been tugged at so often and so much that it's they'll just decide on Friday or Saturday if they want to buy, which is hard for me to believe because it's such a stellar card. I would hope that most MMA fans are planning on getting this card on Saturday, because you're only getting, like, with this WME buyout, it seems like we're only getting one or two really good cards a year. They're running very much a movie studio model out, focused on one or two Hollywood-esque type stars that they just put at the front of the company and hope they can carry them. Only problem is this isn't Hollywood, and it's the fight game, and you got plenty of people that are out for themselves. Not that Hollywood isn't like that, but they don't risk their brains every time they go out to shoot a movie. So it's a very interesting dynamic we're dealing with right now.
Very true. Very true. It'll be interesting to see where we're at come early Sunday morning after this main event is done, and whether, you know, St. Pierre does win. I the visual potentially of him against a Rockhold or a Romero, or just the size difference alone. I can't get behind. I can't picture it with Bisping. Obviously there's no lack of challengers, which is the good thing. It's just a question of who's going to be the guy to actually face those challengers. And everyone seems to forget, including myself, guys like Robert Whittaker. And this guy that actually won the interim title and should be, you know, hopefully he's there on Saturday just to help him give some sort of rub and some sort of, like, this is the guy that holds the other quote-unquote piece of this title. You know, he should be the guy that is next in line, but it's very, very odd. So I'm glad we're getting past this. I just really kind of wonder on Sunday where we're going to be at with all this stuff, and probably a little bit more confusion than clarity. Hopefully we are not like that with the co-main event, which is really an excellent fight we're supposed to see this summer. Cody Garbrandt, TJ Dillashaw, the blood rivals, things finally spilling over in the octagon. Garbrandt, obviously, this as I mentioned, this fight was supposed to happen this summer. Cody Garbrandt had the back injury. We don't know. We kind of assume he's 100% or as close to being 100% as we can after this. Dillashaw, the last we'd heard of him, really was looking to fight Demetrius Johnson for the flyweight title. So obviously he now gets the bantamweight title shot instead. This fight should promises to be awesome, and hopefully it does not disappoint. I can't imagine it disappointing. Garbrandt and Dillashaw, what are you thinking about this?
Oh, it's my favorite fight on the card.
Yeah.
Even just the old pro wrestling standpoint of, this is a program that's been building for a while. you know, there's real animosity there. There's a real history there. I think it's a real intriguing history. One of the few kind of great rivalries, that we've had in the sub 155, divisions. The divisions have only been around for whatever, 6 or 7 years, some of them. So I think it's cool from that standpoint. And then obviously from a competitive standpoint, it's about as high level, A-plus cream of the crop as you can get. I've been very high on Cody Garbrandt for a very long time. I actually, one of the last UFC magazines that was ever, issued before it was shuttered and closed down. I got to do a story on Cody before the Henry Briones fight. And I would tell anyone who listened after I did that story, I told them that, you know, I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know the matchups he's going to get. I was like, but he has every trait and every ability to become the next champion and star in that division. And it was partly because I thought his boxing was so far ahead. I got to see him hit mitts and see his footwork and see the way he worked angles and the way he transitioned. And you know, with his wrestling background, it was all extremely high level. And just on the eye test, it was, I don't want to say light years ahead of everything else I had seen. It was just clearly better than everything else I had seen. But the one thing with Garbrandt that sets him apart as far as anybody that he fights, and I don't care who it is he's just crazy. He's legitimately violent. He legitimately, like the No Love moniker for Cody Garbrandt is perfectly apt. He comes from a real rugged town in the Midwest. His dad is a lifelong criminal and a very bad dude who's currently locked up. You know, he's got a long history of family violence and chaos. And he's channeled that into a really high level career as a professional athlete. And it just so happens that, you know, profession is fighting, which is perfect for him because he's got a lot of aggression and he has no stop. So you're very similar to like a prime Vanderlei Silva or other extremely dangerous people with rock solid chins that, you know, that divisions are kind of built on and have these kind of legendary legacies. You're going to have to really put it on Cody Garbrandt to beat him. And then on the flip side, you have TJ Dillashaw, who is, lightning fast, mean in his own right. You don't get to be a champion without being mean. And, you know, has had some outstanding fights and a brief title reign of his own that, you know, was pretty impressive as well. My concern with this fight in general, is as much as I'm looking forward to it and as much as I think it's my favorite fight on the card and I have all these questions surrounding how it might play out, is kind of the unfortunate nature at which it's happening, which I mean, I'm referencing that they both fought on the same card almost a year ago, about 10 and a half months ago. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, not ideal for me. I know that's a little common in sports like boxing, but in MMA, you know, 10 months a year, that's a long time. I just hope we get, what I'm saying is, I hope we get both at their very best on Saturday. There's no necessary reason to think we won't, but that I am a little bit hesitant from that layoff, but we'll see.
A lot of the conversation after Garbrandt won the title was him being a quote-unquote star, right? And I think it's a conversation that I get more exhausted with every time I hear it, because in general, I think in both pro wrestling and MMA, because I think, you know, stars just a lot of times just kind of happen. And you mentioned Hollywood before, and I was talking to you a while ago about this, about some people, you know, they just are stars because people gravitate to them, and there's something you can't explain. There's thousands of actors and actresses, and there are some people that just they think, okay, this is going to be the next big movie star, and it just falls flat. They just fall flat. They just don't connect for whatever reason. The public just, they kind of feel maybe they're trying to be marketed to or what have you. And then you have someone like the say the Stranger Things kids that become superstars because the show and the vehicle is great and they're recognizable and it's fun. And people just associate them with a different schematic, so to speak, than maybe a different group of kids or something like that. If there was more force, it's the vehicle, it's the kids, and it's just this magic fairy dust that just sometimes people just they connect for whatever reason. Every form of entertainment, and that's obviously what pro sports are. Sports are entertainment, and I think with Cody, he's got these elements. I don't see the instant, like, he's going to be the guy to do the 500-600K pay-per-views in the years ahead. It's possible. I think with the right foils, with the right opponents, with the right kind of build, and just, you know, I think there are some things that can change that. But I also don't think there's a lot of guys currently and girls in the UFC right now that could all of a sudden say, one or two fights away from being the next big draw. It is just this It's the company. It's the cards they're on. It's the feeling. It's everything. So I think he can be, I mean, he can be a definitely a notable champion for them. I don't know as far as a star goes. I'm not fully seeing it, but you know, I guess we'll have to kind of see how things play out. But obviously you've talked to him and you've mentioned this before. You just mentioned this, that he was going to be the guy. I think he can be the flag bearer for 135 for a long time. I don't know if he's got that huge crossover feel to him though.
Right. Well, I think the biggest mistake they made was putting him on television to kind of expose him and his lack of personality. Like, I like Cody very much. I think he's one hell of a fighter. I think the only thing you got to do with Cody is clip together, you know, his knockout highlight reel and him robot dancing on Dominic Cruz. you know, the fight skill and the violence behind Garbrandt, especially at 135, which is a division you don't see, the type of knockouts he can deliver, you just don't see that often at that division, especially against the talent that he's going to be facing. But yeah, I think, you know, putting him on the Ultimate Fighter, and he's just a bland pretty boy who can cave faces in. Like, I'm not trying to be like, you know, super heavy on the imagery here, but I can't stress enough how prime Garbrandt is right now at 26 years old, and how intact his chin is, and how violent, you know, he's capable of being. He's on another level. He's in the realms of the Carlos Condits, and the Justin Gaethjes, and the people who just do not care about their own well-being. They're just going to fight you as hard as they possibly can, and you're pretty much going to have to kill them to put them away. So yeah, putting him on TV and putting him out there to try to, you know, make him a personality and see him as a talker, I think that's a mistake. Similar to the mistake of putting Gaethje out there. Mm-hmm. People like Garbrandt and Gaethje, you sell them by having them fight because they are so unique. And they're so unique at one thing, and that is fighting. And they do their talking, and they do their artistry, and they show their charisma and their character through their fighting. I haven't gotten to speak with Cody since the win over Dillashaw, over Cruz almost a year ago. But I have been dying to ask him about that and kind of highlighted here the fact that so much personality did come out in that fight against Cruz. The fact that he did robot dance on Dominic Cruz, like, where did that come from? We had never seen that before. Now, part because he finished fights so damn early, but also because he, I guess, hadn't been feeling that confidence, or he had just never busted it out, or he wanted to do it against Cruz because there was a vendetta. I don't know. I just know that he did it, and I know I couldn't believe my eyes that he did it. But that's the beauty of fighting. When a fighter can be boring as hell outside the cage, where he can be, you know, just kind of run-of-the-mill, everyday, kind of Midwest white boy. That's essentially what Garbrandt is, with a throat tattoo. That's Cody Garbrandt. But the fact that he could bring so much personality out in that fight and start robot dancing in the middle of a fight with the greatest 135-pound fighter up until that point was absolutely shocking. So I think, you know, this is where the promotion really comes into play, right? The UFC is responsible for this. You are responsible for telling that story. You are responsible for going out there and telling everyone how awesome Cody Garbrandt is. It is not my job. It really isn't. I don't have millions of dollars. I don't have WME behind me. You do. So I know why they're putting Cody on here to boost off of GSP and Bisping. That's what they've always done with GSP. They've always tried to put up-and-coming talent on his cards. You should be doing more for Cody, especially in light of this being his biggest fight yet against even when his career is all said and done, TJ could still be his greatest rival. This could be the birth of a great trilogy. Yeah. There's just so many ways to frame this. That's killing me that they're not doing it, I guess, in the way and in the volume I'd like to see with them. But, we'll see. As you said, Sunday's a new day, and, it's going to tell us a lot.
It certainly will, and hopefully the next show will be he headlines. Assume if he wins on Saturday, will be in Cleveland.
Yes.
You know, I think Cleveland, that's a place that he's done well in. Same with Stipe Miocic, we saw from that last show. I think that's my hope is that going forward, they really do this, not I guess regional route in terms of local guys, big fights and let them kind of build up. They've aired a lot of times in the past with this. I think they aired, you know, putting Kevin Lee on that Detroit show and so on. It's just, you know, there's a lot of these things, but I think if
Kobe Demetrius Johnson on any Seattle card ever.
Right, right. Exactly. So there's a lot they can do there. And hopefully if Cody wins,
sure,
they'll be able to do that. So there's a lot of other things to talk about the rest of the show, but I want to kind of, it was a couple other things I want to get to you about, get with you about before I let you go. Just real quick, though, you have Jacek Rosnamiunas, Wonderboy Thompson against the aforementioned Jorge Masvidal, Johnny Hendricks still looking to keep his career alive. We have James Vick, Joe Duffy. We have Mickey Gall finally returning back for the first time in a long time in that epic victory over CM Punk. What, as you kind of look up and down the card, what else, what really stands out at you that you're really interested in, both either from a fight perspective, but also from a result perspective?
Well, honestly, all those fights you just mentioned, 217 is a ridiculously good card. Hendricks has name value. I'd say it's the least interested I am in any of the main card fights, but Wonderboy and Masvidal, for me, is so intriguing for so many different reasons. Just on the surface, though, just from a baseline, why you should be excited for this fight. Masvidal's never gotten this rub. And for a lot of people, he's a lot of hardcore fans, MMA hardcore's favorite fighter.
Yep.
He's extremely well varied with a fan friendly fighting style. He's got that Diaz esque street vibe to him where he'll just come up and smack you in the face and you can scrap right there on the spot. He's very likable in that regard, kind of a bit of a villain, but he walks that line. I think a lot of people love him for that. Like I said, the anti-hero in the Nick Diaz cast mold. And then you've got this Southern Charmer, karate, stand-up wizard and a Wonder Boy who could very well be the champion of that division and is fairly well-known amongst the MMA community, which I like for Masvidal because Masvidal, he had the cowboy fight, but people don't want to fight Masvidal. So I give a lot of credit for Wonderboy taking this fight, because a lot of people, in the mainstream don't know who Masvidal is, even with the cowboy win and some other, fights he's had. But it's nice for me to see because I think it's going to tell us a lot about Masvidal. If Masvidal, can get past Wonderboy, then he should be, right in, I don't want to say title contention, but one fight away from it. It's a career fight for Masvidal, and that's what I'm excited for. And for Wonderboy, he's in a bit of weird purgatory because I don't know who's clamoring to see him fight Wonderboy, to fight Woodley again.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happens if he beats Masvidal. I really don't. I don't know what happens to him. I don't know if weight change is a possibility for him. I highly doubt it, but Woodley might be forced to fight him again, from the standpoint that we talked about this a little bit earlier in regards to the winner of Bisping GSP. If Bisping wins, I don't really know or care so much what he's going to do. I imagine it'll be a unification fight with Whitaker, but I do not expect George St. Pierre to fight Whitaker if he wins. I do not expect George St. Pierre to fight at middleweight again if he wins. I expect George St. Pierre to take a fight with Conor McGregor at welterweight. I think that has been a fight that the UFC has wanted quietly. I think if you read between the lines of some of George St. Pierre's talk about business and we'll see what the future holds and a lot of that stuff in the non-commitment with Ferguson McGregor, I think everyone wants to see the company and both fighters included. What's going to happen on Saturday to see if a McGregor and GSP fight is in the books? Because if St. Pierre can come out victorious on Saturday night, you're talking about a guy who's always been concerned with branding and money and legacy. And McGregor's crazy enough to take the fight. We know that McGregor will definitely take the fight. It'll be that classic good versus evil, the good guy versus the bad guy. And they'll, similar to the way Mayweather McGregor was, but with a bit more legitimacy. Wonderboy, getting back to Wonderboy and that kind of maelstrom of a welterweight division and how this all hinges on all these different possibilities. We might be getting a third Wonder Boy Woodley fight. And I know there's like a million people who just cringed at the thought of that, but yeah. You know, competition and legitimacy still do matter. And you know, there aren't going to be a lot of people that can jump Wonder Boy if he wins on Saturday night. You know what I mean? It just might be the fight they're forced into making. And I'm sure Dana White will enjoy that, getting to throw it at Tyron a little bit more, because they seem to have a bit of a contentious relationship. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. And you mentioned the possibility of McGregor and GSP. Obviously, I think that was something that they have wanted for quite some time. That would fit in my theory that McGregor at this point is only going to be interested in big money fights. I don't think he's interested in being a division regular, a champion that's going to defend against all comers. I think he's interested in fights like the Nate Diaz trilogy fight, the GSP fight, and stuff that is going to allow him to fight twice a year, make, you know, as much money as possible. He could be in this for another couple of years and then call it good. I think he at this point, after the Mayweather fight, is at a much different position than he was before. And he's just not a regular mixed martial artist anymore. He's not interested in being in the mix. He's interested in being the guy that stirs the mix, that the guy in the promotion, and almost bigger than the UFC. And I think that is
not almost.
Yeah.
Not almost.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Yep. So
no, he is.
Yeah, and he knows it. I mean, he knows it with you know, Jones gone, Ronda Rousey gone. It's just he is he's the guy. He is the guy. He's their most important asset that they have. And I think they want to get the most out of it. If it doesn't, if it means, you know, not defending a title, but doing, you know, two fights a year against big names and more kind of fantasy dream fights, I think that's his game. And that's, you know, honestly, I think we have to all come to grips with that if, as long as we get to see him fight, and not retire in general, I think that's or have terrible boxing fights against, you know, Pauly Malignaggi. I think we're all, good with that. And I think we all kind of have
Absolutely, and I completely agree with you about everything in regards to the McGregor's future and what fans can come to expect. And I think it's also important to point out that Conor McGregor has never been concerned with any of this. That's why he knocked out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds and moved on.
Yeah.
That's why he beat Eddie Alvarez and moved on. Ever since he stepped on the scene, and I was with him his very first day in America, he took that the Ferrari ride with Dana White down the Las Vegas Strip. I wrote a piece for MMA Weekly on this. You can search it on Google, One Night with the Don, and then just search MMA Weekly. But they took him out to an Irish pub the very next day. They flew him all the way from Dublin to America just to bring him to a faux Irish pub in the center of Las Vegas. We had a good laugh about that. But I can tell you, that kid I met, and that was also the first day he signed with Audie Attar of his current manager. Huh. So they linked up that day. It was after his first win in the UFC. They knew he was going to be a star. They brought him out to get him in front of media. And he is the same guy that he was back then that he is today. Now, he puts stuff on. He adds a little extra flair to it. But as far as him being an astute, aware danger to all fight promoters, which he is, he's always been that. He always knew his value. He always knew his place. He spoke kindly of the Fertittas and Dana, called Dana the Don, you know, kissed their ass, did everything he needed to do. But all the while knowing that as I win these fights, you are going to pay me. And as you pay me and as I win these fights, eventually I'm going to have my own promotion, McGregor Sports and Entertainment. And then eventually I'm going to be the sport. And then eventually you're going to be calling me boss and the Don. Now, there's a little hyperbole to that, but not really, because we're living it right now. He's done the things that he said he was going to do. His losses didn't matter, or his loss didn't matter, because it was at 170 pounds, and he came back and avenged it at 170 pounds. A 145-pound fighter doing that is absolutely psychotic. And I know there's people that say, oh, Nate isn't a real 170-er and blah, blah, blah. I don't even know where to begin with that. Conor moved up, you know, an immense amount of weight and went 1-1 at 170. So he's always been concerned with any fight that, as you said, can get him paid in any weight class. And let that be a lesson to all future fighters, to anybody, to anybody in any division, to pros, to amateurs, you know your value. And I'm not saying be like Conor McGregor, but if you have reason to be, if you have the wins, if you have the pedigree, if you believe in yourself, and that goes for anything, I guess, in any profession. But, you know, McGregor really is laying a blueprint for future fighters, very much in the same way that George St. Pierre did before Connor. I think Chael has taken Connor has taken a great mix of Chael Sonnen and George St. Pierre. He's taken the business approach and the astuteness to fights and legacy to the way George did. Now, I know George chased records, right? Whereas Connor doesn't do that. Connor chases money and prestige. But as far as being coveted and being aware of his branding and being aware of his value, I think very much Connor learned from George. And then obviously on the mic, he learned from Chael. So he really is a hybrid. And I'm just looking forward to who's the hybrid going to be between Demetrius Johnson and Connor McGregor that we get in 15 years. Mm. That's the fighter I'm looking forward to.
Final question, given everything that's happened the past couple of weeks with Donald Cerrone going down to the hands of Darren Till, Colby Covington dispatching Damian Maia, 170 is a very interesting division, has been for a while, but we talked a little bit about Thompson, Masvidal, Woodley, and so on. I had this question on Twitter, and I wanted to pose it to you because it's an interesting one. He asked, who do you think would be the future of the welterweight division? Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, Mike Perry, Darren Till. How would you kind of see jostle them around in terms of who would you think to be the future of the welterweight division?
Well, I'd say the future of the welterweight division is Rory McDonald, but they shipped him off. They shipped him off to Bellator,
right?
In an inexplicable move. No, out of those, it's hard to say.
It is. It's a tough question.
It is. I'm not gonna touch Kamaru yet because I just haven't seen enough from him. I know he's on a nice little win streak here. And the same thing goes for Perry. They're just two guys that are doing well right now. I tend to look more at Till specifically and Covington, obviously because they're coming off of two name wins and two pretty impressive wins. Like Covington battered Damian Maia. He bloodied him up and Maya's just not a guy you do that to often. It's just not, that's not really his MO. First of all, he's not a guy you beat much. He's definitely not a guy you beat down. So that was impressive. That said, it was his only really super impressive win on his resume. And it is an impressive win. I don't want to take anything away from that, but there's just not a lot there. And the same thing goes for Till. The Cowboy win was incredible. I wish it would have been on something other than Fight Pass because I think Donald Cerrone is a commodity. I think he's, despite having a lot of losses and big moments, we were talking about the it factor, right? The star power, Donald isn't McGregor, obviously, but a lot of people love Donald Cerrone. And I really think they messed that up putting that fight on Fight Pass that nobody saw. Nobody saw that fight. And damn it, they should have because that was a showcase for Darren Till. Mm-hmm. So I'm along with everybody. I want to see Till take on Covington. I think that's a great fight, and I'm gonna be a wuss about that question. I'm gonna say the winner of Till and Covington is gonna be the future of the division. But I wouldn't be surprised if those two ended up battling it out, in a trilogy in the future. Maybe they have their first fight not for a title, and maybe their next fight is for a title.
Yeah.
I think they're both capable of it. I just haven't seen enough against high-level competition. But like I said, I, like many others, would love to see them fight one another. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a lot of combos of that, and, of course, with other guys, just because it's interesting. I think that with Usman is a guy that's kind of just he's been on the rise, and I think he's very interesting, someone that people haven't really latched on to yet, but I think he gets a big win against a big name. That changes that conversation. Colby Covington obviously doing his part, trying to promote himself and be the heel and just get under people's skins, and he backed it up with that, just a bludgeoning of Maia this past weekend, which to your point, I mean, who does that? Nobody does that. It could be a case of Maia just hit the empty on the tank at the right time, what have you. But Colby Covington, he's kind of on the rise, but I don't know. There's still something there I'm curious about, but I guess we'll kind of see what happens in his next fight. I think Mike Perry is going to be one of these guys that is a entertaining fighter, co-main event FS1 type of guy like a Matt Brown back in the day, but like someone that just would go out there, it's going to be like an action fight, right? A Donald Cerrone type.
Well,
like that would get close.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. And then finally with Darren Till, I wonder, similar with Covington, if maybe Cerrone, he caught Cerrone at the right time and maybe we haven't seen the best of him. But a lot of people, he's a big guy. That's the thing too. And he's got a lot of potential. And it's interesting because you can have this debate with any of these guys and others that I'm sure we're not even mentioning and throw them in this mix and be like, I like this guy for this reason, this guy for this reason. They can agree with each other and be like, wow, this is, I mean, welterweight is outstanding, really, really well stacked, and looking forward to a big 2018 with these guys. It's great.
Yeah. And we got Carlos Condit coming back. And to the point of Perry, he's super rare. The kind of mix of aggression and then carelessness as far as himself outside the cage. Like he's very much himself. He can tend to overrun his headlights and promo work. And even in the fight, he can get so far ahead of himself that he puts himself in danger. But both of those traits, I think, you know, I like, because they're just rare, true villains and true people who really kind of relish that villain role and aren't doing it necessarily to sell tickets or to, you know, brand themselves. They're just doing it because they generally enjoy it. They understand that this is the fight game, and whether it's a mental edge or a business edge or just the way they're built, they really don't care. They don't even think about it. And Mike Perry strikes me as a guy who doesn't even think about his brand or think about anything, really. He's just straight ahead, you know, in your face, and a danger to anybody who fights him. You know, Perry's one of those guys that could lose multiple fights and he's always going to have value in the UFC. So, I don't know about contender status. I don't know if any of these guys are ever going to even sniff a UFC title. I really don't, because they haven't fought anybody yet that, to at least the number and the degree, that would lead me to believe that they could put a title run together. But I can tell you the person who has the most chance at a long career in the UFC is Perry. He's one of the Lieben, Gaethje, whoever, Diaz, just high volume, charismatic, and just kind of oblivious to himself. And that's a good thing, you know, when you're just keeping it real, I guess.
Before I let you go, you've been very generous with your time. We appreciate it. Give you a chance. I'll throw the microphone to you, and you can go ahead and promote. Obviously, where people can listen to you. We talked about that at the beginning of the show, but where people can read you, listen to you, and talk to you on social media. The floor is yours.
Well, I appreciate that, Josh. No, you guys can find me on Twitter, at Ryan McKinnell. Really easy to find. Dialogue with me on there. Chatted up about MMA. You can find my work on Fansided SI. Still contribute to Yahoo occasionally. And most importantly, if you want to hear me next, you can catch me on Saturday for the UFC pre- and post-fight shows on Sirius XM Rush 93. We'll be rocking 2 till 5 p.m. Leading up right to the prelims. And then as soon as the pay-per-view concludes between St. Pierre and Bisping, we'll be back live on the air to wrap up and take calls and discuss the chaos. Something tells me we're going to have plenty to talk about after Saturday night, Josh. There's just so much on the line. Not so much necessarily gold, right, and UFC legacy and the most wins in company history and all that stuff, but also the McGregor sweepstakes. And it really sets the table for 2018 in a big way.
I would agree. And for those out there that have been thinking about Sirius, or maybe just haven't for some reason not aware there's a Rush channel, I would urge you to check it out. A lot of good stuff on there, as Ryan talked about, and varied voices and different stuff. It's a lot of great stuff on there. So I would urge you to check it out. Try to take advantage of a free trial, or, you know, finally just hit buy. Just hit buy, listen to the shows. You can't get enough MMA talk in your day. Look, there's podcasts and all this stuff, but have this kind of fill in the gaps and 24/7, just loop it over and over and over again, and you'll be a very happy person. So with that, we'll bid farewell to our guest this week, our friend Ryan McKinnell. Ryan, thanks so much for joining Josh Ace's Punch Out. Hopefully you'll be back, and enjoy Saturday night.
Josh, it was a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Big thanks to Ryan McKinnell for stopping by. You can follow him on Twitter, listen to him on Sirius this weekend, and every weekend there's a show, which is, according to the schedule, Now to Eternity, and obviously read his stuff at Fansided, SI, and Yahoo Sports. So again, thanks to you guys for checking us out this week. should be back. My hope is next week, could be the week after, but my hope is next week. Kind of do a wrap up of the GSP Bisping UFC 217 show, kind of see where we're at and where we're going to go in the weeks and months ahead. And there is no shortage of events coming up, as you know, over the next 2 months. So lots to talk about, year end shows I got to start planning for. So, man, going to be a lot of stuff going on, plus JNPO classics and all that good stuff. So, yeah, this is a fun time of year, busy time of year, and it's time for yours truly to get back at it. So, again, a lot of choice in your podcasting day. Appreciate you stopping by. One more time, thanks to Ryan McKinnell. Thanks to all of you. Episode 81 of JNPO is in the books. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.